Michael Avery with Classic Business.
All right, you're rejoining Warwick Lucas, standing in for Michael Avery, and I've got Raymond Parsons in the studio with me and Stephen Mainchies. So, Raymond, we have seen some rather ugly-looking business sentiment, manufacturing and mining numbers. Let's talk about the RMB BER confidence index first of all. That fell 3 points to 28 in the first quarter of 2019, and it's a little bit concerning in that this is a broad-based decline. I think,
Warwick, we should really stand back when we talk about the macroeconomic picture and combine three developments this week, which were, as you've indicated already, some negative pieces of news about the bigger picture. The first was, as you've indicated, the recent sharp fall in business confidence, reflected both in the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry Index, which is a monthly one, as well as the RMB Stellenbosch one, which is a quarterly one. And as you say, that was a negative message. Then we had the weak manufacturing output figures, which were below expectations. And then we had the negative mining production figures, which were also below expectations. So what message does this converge on at this point? Well, it simply says, look, this is simply not good news at a time when you want to get private sector investment spending going, because you want to get growth going and you want to realize at least the growth numbers that we've seen in the budget for this year, and others who've made forecasts of a 1.3, 1.4 growth rate. So I think we've got to ask ourselves, but why are we being confronted with this? And I would think perhaps among the factors which have weakened the drivers of growth at this point, firstly, and I think foremostly, has been very much the impact of renewed load shedding on the economy and the costs that it does impose on both consumers and business. And, you know, my forecast, my very tentative forecast at this stage is that if it persists, it could shave another 0.3 or 0.4% off the growth rate, off the existing low forecasts. And then there's the continued uncertainty around policy and what will happen with the election. I think that's inevitable. I think we mustn't be too surprised. But there are a number of factors there which quite clearly create a sort of wait-and-see environment around investment until we have the election. And then finally, the point that you made earlier, which I think because the construction sector plays such an important part as a growth driver in our economy, the fact that infrastructural spending is not where it should be, or even if the numbers are where they should be, it's not being implemented in ways that show tangible outcomes in the sector, I think that's another factor which is explaining some of these negative trends. So broadly speaking, both the positive and the negative factors that seem to be operating in our economy at this point in time, it seems to me that our economy is really in a sort of holding pattern until we get past this election.
Okay, and in terms of currency and trade figures, I mean, is the rand at the right figure where it's more or less in balance? I mean, or is it still a one-way street on the rand, do you think?
Well, you know, Warwick, I often say that forecasts, those who forecast the rand in the past and in the future, that's a graveyard of many forecasters. I know no one has really been very good at it, simply because it's like the two blades of a scissors. There are external factors and there are internal factors. And sometimes you don't know which one is doing the cutting.
Like George Bernard Shaw, you're wary about forecasts, especially about the future.
Especially. But I think the rand is a particularly volatile currency, as we know. And we know also what some of the external factors have been. But I think some of the internal factors, some of which we've already touched upon, I think are also feeding in to the view of the rand at the moment. So it's going through a vulnerable period at the moment. And I think it is to some extent tied in with what we said a few minutes ago.
Well, one of the pleasures of being a South African is that it gives one the opportunity to take a vicarious look at what's going on and our dear friends in the UK. And I think looking at the British Parliament, it reminds us a little bit as to the old saying about how politicians are like diapers and need changing for the same reasons. And what an exciting mess that we seem to have there. But can you pull it together for us, Raymond? What actually has happened in the last week?
Well, I think what has happened in the last week as far as Brexit is concerned, and I did read an amusing tweet today which said that Brexit should now become Brextuck rather than Brexit. But this has a history going back, of course, for the United Kingdom many years, but in particular to the referendum of 2016, where those who wanted to leave won by a small margin, 52% to 48%. And although it was not a binding referendum, it was an advisory referendum, quite clearly politically it was interpreted as a mandate which the new Prime Minister, and that is Mrs. May, felt she had to implement. And it's been a moving target. I think, once again, we've been interested because the ultimate outcome does affect our relations with them, and we are and have been taking steps to prepare ourselves for whatever changes might come. But that said, quite clearly, some mistakes were made in the whole negotiating process. I'm not going to go into all that. And this Brexit brinkmanship has now brought us to a point where we were facing the very strong risk that Britain would crash out of the EU on the 29th of March without a deal. That's where we were a week ago. Now, fortunately, it seems to have concentrated the parliamentary minds wonderfully that at least the British Parliament made up its mind what it was against. It was against Mrs. May's deal, and it was against having to crash out. Now, that has come together in the last few days, where a decision has now been taken. They will ask for an extension of time, which seemed to me to be quite inevitable already a long time ago. But as you say, of course, there's been a lot of deep and high politics as well as low politics around the whole Brexit process. Now, on the 22nd of March, the UK Prime Minister will have to go back to Brussels to ask for more time, based on whether between now and then she can have a third attempt to get her deal through on Tuesday. If not, would she put some other proposition to the EU? Now, I think, very briefly, if her deal eventually passes on Tuesday and she has a deal to take, that would be a mere technicality for the EU. They'd say, we're happy to give you another month or two to tidy all this up, as long as you're out by the end of May before the European elections. But
so saying is that she's not necessarily a legacy prisoner of all the many things that she got wrong in terms of handling Brexit.
Oh, I think there will be a post-mortem eventually when the dust has settled. There will be a political post-mortem in the United Kingdom, just as there has been a post-mortem about their involvement in the Iraq War. So I think there will be, but at the moment, you must deal with the situation where it is. How do you deal with where you are? What are the options? And some other options might come up in the debate on Tuesday. In that case, the EU is likely to say, now, hang on, you must have a strategy for more time. We're not giving you more time merely to go around this loop again. We want to know, is it going to be an election? Do you want a customs union? Are you going to go for a second referendum if her deal does not get through? So that is more problematical. So while many people might have heaved a sigh of relief that more time is what the UK now needs, the uncertainty hasn't entirely gone away. A lot will depend on whether her deal is now accepted, in which case there's a firm base to get a technical extension, which would be, if you would like to put it, a win-win situation for the EU and the United Kingdom and other countries like South Africa who do business with both those players. Or alternatively, will the uncertainty as to the exact option or strategy be then perpetuated beyond the 29th of March, in which case you might get a veto from one or other country in the EU, because to get an extension of time requires a unanimous vote from all 27 countries. So they're not out of the woods yet.
Now, one of the votes that we saw there was issue of a second referendum, and it was rather badly kicked into touch, substantially aided by the refusal of Labour to participate in the vote. But why was that so inappropriate in terms of its timing?
Well, look, as we know, this is highly controversial. It has been a highly controversial process, all of one. It cuts very deep in the United Kingdom. We have to understand that.
Let me put it another way. What's it going to take to actually get the second referendum put on the table?
There's been a lot of resistance to a second referendum because they've had one, and they say, well, that was it. But the fact remains that a lot more information is now available as to the costs of what you decided 3 years ago. So there is a view, it's not a majority view, but is a view that you know so much more, we have a deal that has been negotiated, you should put it back to the people and say, are you prepared now to go along with the deal with the costs and the advantages, if you want to put it that way, of what you decided 3 years ago in the referendum? If they don't accept it, then you stay in the EU. I mean, that's the sort of referendum. But in my reading of the tea leaves, that is the last option when you've exhausted all the others which have not yet been exhausted. And that's why that vote in Parliament, in the UK Parliament last night, was defeated heavily, because no one is ready to face up to that yet. There's still other options which need to be discussed. But I think we must also talk a little bit about the implications for South Africa.
Absolutely. It's one thing for them to commit harakiri, so to speak. It's quite another to face in on that and say, well, how do we as a country get the best out of a tricky situation?
Well, as you know, we've had long and strong trade and investment links, and our economies are complementary. They're our sixth biggest trading partner. We obviously have an interest in what they decide, although it's over to them to decide. We have to look after our own relations with them, where we want continuity, we want stability in our trade relations. The two governments have already been doing negotiations, haven't quite completed them, to ensure some continuity. And had Britain fallen out, or at least had it crashed out of the EU at the end of this month, we would have had to come to some kind of temporary arrangement. But there would have been huge disruption for us as well. We would not have been immune from what would have happened, the huge shock that a crashing out would have done. But now there's extra time. So I would simply say that we will obviously want to have good relations with a post-Brexit UK. There will be some shifts in the markets, in the market shares, because I think it will involve over time some restructuring of the UK economy, which will offer us both opportunities, some lower tariffs for our wine and fruit in the one instance, but in some other instances we might be faced with higher tariffs. And other big question is, what is the long-run prospects for the UK economy in the event of a soft Brexit or a different Brexit?
Any idea what sort of product lines or industries we'd be facing a higher tariffs from the
Example, had they fallen out on the 29th, we had the prospect of for example, car tariffs, for example.
Right.
But fortunately, that's removed for the time being. I think my only point at this, and that's why we've been monitoring it, because we've tended to think this is just purely a British problem, but quite clearly there are unintended consequences. We need to watch our own economic interests in those two markets, both the EU and the UK. And I would simply say that it's now very important, because you've got this phase of either 3 months or even longer as to whether this issue will be finalised, that it's really in the interests of South African business who have links both in the EU and in the UK, to constantly monitor this, to assess it, to talk if they've got clients there because they're exporting, or they have suppliers there because they're importing. They must make an extra effort to stay in touch. Also with our Department of Trade and Industry, who's been very seized with wanting to stabilize the situation under the Brexit process. So I think it's, I think this must be on the agenda of those businesses who just have a stake in the British economy and who really need to monitor some of the changes that might come as a result of either a short Brexit or a prolonged one. And,
that
matter is still open.
On one specific sector, have you any idea how agriculture would be affected given that Britain was part of the CAP? Would our agricultural sector benefit in any way if they don't maintain such high protection?
I think that is one of the advantages, is that if you're out of the EU agricultural system, Britain will be able to cut its tariffs. Mm. It's already said so, and part of that has been partly negotiated with South Africa already. It hasn't quite been finalized. Mm. But I'm saying we need to stand back as South African business, who, after all, there are other sectors involved. And we also need to ask ourselves how the prospects for the British economy will change given the nature of the Brexit. I think if it's a soft Brexit, I think there will be opportunities rather than risks. But if it turns out to be a negative outcome, if for one or other reason, if this time is not well used by the EU and by the UK, then I think we would find that perhaps the risks would be greater than the opportunities. But the important point for South African business is to now keep this issue on the agenda to the extent that they have a stake in the British market.
Very quickly, Raymond, the week ahead, there's a couple more votes. What's a timeline and what do we hope to see achieved in the next couple of weeks?
I think the two most important days will be Tuesday, when the UK Parliament will be debating the deal, which will be brought back by Mrs. May, and secondly, whether they will go with her deal or put something else on the table, which will then decide what the interaction will be between the United Kingdom and the EU at the next summit meeting, which is next Friday. And that will be very determined on how flexible the EU will be in responding to the request for extra time from the UK.
Well, what a cliffhanger they've certainly been creating there. And it's at the moment looking a lot more like a Dunkirk than an Agincourt. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this evening. And that's it from the Classic Business team for this week. Thank you for tuning in. And my thanks to producer Andries Maslango, sound engineers Mdun Kele and Mataba Taba Radebe. Rod Miller is standing by for our Cape Town listeners. And Caroline Staines, Classic Wind Down for listeners of Classic FM here in Joburg.